Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John tells us what not to say in a fight with your wife and that we basically drink orange juice for breakfast because of a government contract during World War II. Meanwhile, I have a dumb idea for church drum cages and have a conflicted relationship with my team's colors. Plus a conversation about people doing good while working in a flawed system and why changing your mind can lead to changing your life. Today's episode is not sponsored by User Agreements. Just check the box. We know you didn't read it. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Johnny, it's another episode of everyone's favorite podcast. Let's talk about that.
We're back.
Everyone's abroad. It's a broad way. I find we have a rule in life, really, and that's anytime you say always or never, or everyone or always, that's usually...
Yeah.
It's not
good. You're being... you're kind of boiling people down.
So when I say everyone's favorite podcast...
Isn't that the big no-no when you're having a fight? Don't say always, don't say never.
Right. If you say
like you always do this,
right?
I don't say that. I say you're just like your mother. That's not. I didn't say always or never.
That's right.
All I said
was you didn't say you're always just like your mother.
Right now, you're being your mother. That's very
just right now.
I think that's
just
fair.
Like you did yesterday.
I think
the
that's
day before.
Fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why she won't talk to me.
Those are in my rules too.
Oh, are they in the rules? Oh, I'm saying,
don't bring in family at all if you can, but. If you say...
What if you're saying it in a good way? Like, you know what? You're just like your mother.
Yeah, isn't it funny? The mother's...
Yeah. You mean it in a good way, but still, it's...
I don't think it'd be taken well.
It's a no-no.
We all want to be our own person, Johnny.
That's true. We want to be our own... somebody posted on... Because we posted the clip today. My social media people, they posted the clip from our podcast where we were talking about... If somebody says after a show, like, you remind me of this guy that's in my family or whatever. And I always go, real handsome guy. And they go, they always laugh.
Right. Nervous laughter.
So I posted that. And then somebody posted, like, you actually really do remind me of my whatever.
Right.
And then I posted underneath, he seems like a great guy. I don't know what else to do. Like, what am I supposed to do with that?
Did they say you really are handsome?
No.
Okay.
Nobody's.
I can't go into the detail of it because this is a family show.
Oh.
But I can tell you that we were in New Orleans last week.
Here we go.
And
she went from literally Vegas.
Yeah. So, Lars,
come
gonna
home.
Get, we're going to get all the
New
cities
Orleans.
Of debauchery just out of the way, taking our 15-year-old. But there may or may not have been a woman who came on to me.
Propositioned.
Well, I wasn't going to say it because
well,
it's a family, show.
Well, that's...
I'll just say this. We were in an elevator. I was
you
with,
got hit on by a woman.
I was in an elevator with my family.
With your family. That's how strong the scent. Like, people go, I don't care. I'm going to lay it on the line for this guy.
I was like.
this is, you know what I'm saying? This is.
And she mumbled.
Oh, okay.
But there was something
Are
definitely.
Are you sure that's what she.
Well, that's what my wife thinks.
Okay.
Because it was like a. I was like, excuse me?
Oh, boy.
And then she said something again.
Are you
then,
sure this person wasn't having a stroke?
And then she
needed
said.
Medical attention. And you're like, here we go. I can't go anywhere without people coming on to me. And they're like, no. And then she fell down.
She was like, call 911.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what she was saying. No. And then, but then here's the kicker.
Okay.
Then she said, oh, I heard this. She was like, oh, I didn't realize you were with your family. I'm just going to go now.
Okay.
And we waited for the door to open. So that was what was weird. Whatever she said, she felt
she
awkward
realized it
that
was
she
inappropriate.
Had said it in
suddenly,
front of,
yeah.
But here's the deal. It was just me and my family and her in the elevator.
Mm.
So how she didn't see them standing there, there's a good chance her eyesight. The point being, if she came on to me,
right,
poor eyesight, she didn't see the family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Later on, I saw her down on Bourbon Street for real with some other dude.
Okay.
But walking around. So.
And it might have been her family.
I don't think he was.
Okay.
But anyway, that being said,
Johnny, there's a lot that goes on in New Orleans.
I don't think it was because I was handsome. That's where all this started.
Yeah.
I mean, because I've seen myself.
Let me say this. I'm wearing the shirt that you gave me a couple episodes ago. You gave me a Vols SEC championship shirt. And I don't have a lot. I'm a huge Vols fan, just like you are.
Yeah.
But it's not that I don't love our team colors. It's that, well, let me say that. It's not that I don't love our team.
No.
But I really feel like orange is not a flattering color. And I've struggled with my weight most of my life. And I'm leaner now than I've been most of the time. But it feels like orange is not a forgiving color. Like, I'd rather wear, like, a gray shirt with some orange flair to it.
Right, the smoky gray.
If I'm going to represent the Vols, give me the orange as an accent color. This is a straight up, it's like, it makes me know why we're called Big Orange. Because if you have any weight on you at all, you just look like a big orange. You look like a big orange walking down the street.
That's where it came from.
It came from our fan base.
You know, you were wearing a black jacket over it today.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a nice look.
It's a nice accent.
Right.
But now it's just like,
because you're taking the jacket off now.
I'm out here just being an orange.
Because I had a space heater going in here, and apparently you thought it was hot.
I walked in and I was like, listen, Nana.
I'm telling you, I'm freezing right now. My feet are cold.
Really?
Yeah.
My brother's having that right now where he can't get his feet warm. And he's been on the road with me, and he just talks about it all the time about, like, it's like he's going through menopause.
Manopause.
Is manopause a thing?
I think it is,
actually. They say it is, but we never want to be like, we're diminishing, like, no. I go through the change, too. No, we don't. Like women do.
No, we don't.
It's a different thing. But there is a symptom. There is a hormonal change that happens in men when they get to be a certain age. I turned 50 this year, John.
Well.
I don't want to. I don't want to.
What are you going to do for your 50th?
We should plan a trip, right? We never do that, but we should.
I go out on trips with you sometimes. Let me just tell you my last 8 weeks.
What do you want to? I know you go with your family places, but that's because there's something happening.
Because I love them.
No.
Oh, wait.
No. You would never just, like, if it wasn't for volleyball, you're not going to New Orleans and Vegas.
That's not true.
You went to some jump camp, and you went to a volleyball tournament. You don't just go like,
I'm not
know what would be fun, guys? Let's have a fun trip with your fun dad. You're not fun. So what are we going to do for fun that's not about work?
Well, you know I'm not fun.
Show me. No. I'm saying.
The only time you want to go is when you're working.
I want to.
I got this big show at this big place. You want to tag along and carry my bags?
I
can't believe you.
Help me unlock a fun side of John by just like, let's have a completely just like throw caution to the wind. We're going to go do it. What are we doing? Right.
Playing basketball or golf. Something golf related.
Okay, sure.
Because basketball, our ankles will break.
Yeah. Golf, just our pride will crumble.
I could see us doing something golf related.
We could do a golf trip. Let's do a golf trip for my 50th.
Okay.
In the heat of June.
Yeah.
Because that's when it'll be.
Where could we go? Well.
Somewhere dry, like an Arizona.
Or you want to go out west.
Go out west, somewhere where it's not going to be as oppressive.
In June in the desert.
Yes.
It sounds.
Well, it's a little flatter. You may be getting a little bit length to your drive.
Right, there's not enough water for me to hit into it.
Yes.
Yeah.
They can't afford a water hazard where we're going to play.
They can't do that.
No.
Dries right up.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a fun side of me.
I know, John. I was just teasing.
No, but he doesn't. Enneagram stuff that we study, and not just that, but then IFS, internal family systems. You use what's called parts language. We talked about before, meaning you're more than one thing. You don't have multiple personalities or something, but you just have parts of you that show up in different places, you know. And so we call this my 7 part because I'm a 6, which the 7 is the adventurer, you know, the guy's having fun all the time. And so, and you can even like as an exercise, like give names to that part because you're even known by that. So my 7 part, I call PJ.
This is getting creepy.
Because PJ was Pastor John, and that's
this feels like if something goes wrong, you can just blame that part. You can just be like,
stupid.
PJ did that.
No.
I don't know.
It's not like
Listen,
that.
John didn't get lost. That was PJ the adventurer. he won't read a map. What can you do?
If you'd read any of the books that I write, you'd know that's not what it is.
Classic PJ. He's the worst.
He is the worst. But PJ was the backwards hat youth pastor for 15 years. That was always And he was fun. Me and you would. I mean, I don't know what your fun part would be because you're not the games guy.
I'm not terribly fun.
But we did it, and when we were doing it, we were having fun, and the kids thought it was the best.
Yeah.
Because we had that part of us that we could turn on. Oh, yeah. Now you take the I think Rice Krispie and shoot it out your nose or whatever.
Yeah.
But on a normal day, I don't do that.
Yeah.
I mean.
And there won't have been Rice Krispies around. We just want them to produce a Rice Krispie from their nose.
Can someone, right. Yes. Can you?
Someone.
That one.
He's a witch.
Yeah. But so the other night, PJ came out.
Okay.
We were doing a volunteer appreciation.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
And you got to be Fun John.
Well, Andrew
extrovert
wanted...
Extrovert Fun John.
Andrew made a bingo game out of everybody's fun facts they had put down, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so...
As a get-to-know-you kind of game.
But he wanted me and Andrew and Jake to stand there with microphones as we're spinning the thing and calling the numbers and all. So it was one of those, like, I have to be on a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think I was a little PJ-ish. I was just kind of making up, you know, things to say.
I want to ask other people how they think it went.
I don't think it was funny necessarily. Oh, okay. I just think I was a more fun guy.
I think you're fun and funny, John. No, I'm just razzing you. I'm just busting your chops.
Not
it's fun.
It's fun or anything.
I'm saying that if we went on a trip together, I would want you to be present. I would not want you to be like, all right, let's go do this thing.
You know that when I'm on trips with you, you spend the whole time on your phone.
That is not true.
You are on your phone the entire time.
Untrue.
The reason I'm over here working on stuff is because you're not paying attention to me.
Wow.
And it hurts.
This feels like this needs to be said to a therapist. this is where the healing
begins.
So
the last trip we took was what, Pasadena?
Yeah.
That was a year ago-ish. Mm-hmm. A little over a year.
Yeah. I don't think we were pretty present.
We had a good time.
Yeah.
But you had a high pressure situation.
It was for the AGT audition stuff.
And so I really just wanted to be there to make
48 hours in the, that was a lot.
I wanted to be, as they say in Hamilton, if you were Washington, you would have said to me, as you're Hamilton, I need someone like you to lighten the load. Then you handed me a pen and someone started whispering, I'm not throwing away my shot. I did nothing like that for you.
No.
I didn't write for you.
Uh-uh.
I didn't carry a bag, I don't think.
You left me one day because you went and found lunch somewhere, and I had to be stuck in the room.
You weren't allowed to go.
And I wasn't allowed to
leave.
It
was freezing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to go out and find coffee or something. And so I walked around.
Yeah.
I don't feel bad about it.
I never felt so alone.
I remember you saying, because I asked you, are you sure? Because you were there, you know, rubbing elbows and hobnobbing with all the other contestants and stuff. You're up basically asking people to pull your finger. I mean, just being complete.
Yeah, I was on.
As you are. It was your seven part.
I was like, I don't know why I didn't make it on the show.
And I was like, dude, can I go? I'm freezing to death. Mm-hmm. They keep making me sit in B-roll shots.
Yeah.
Hey, can you just sit in this chair in the middle of the room? We're shooting someone right over here. They would do stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was like, you couldn't tell. It wasn't really a crowd. It was just me.
Yeah.
And that is isolating.
They just copy and paste you five times. Now put this hat
ugly,
on.
Ugly, 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 ugly.
Yeah. Like, nobody said you're ugly, hey, John. They didn't need to say it.
They didn't need to say it because it was...
it was on the casting papers. Like, we need an ugly guy.
Hey.
He's here. He's here.
Go get the ugly lens. We can't get it with this regular one.
Yeah, that's fine.
You know what, Johnny?
What's that?
We're having a lot of fun today. You know what else was fun?
Ads.
I'm pulling all the creativity out of the segue. I'm just going to just call it.
Possibly more.
Just going to call it what it is. Hey, guys, for real, we're grateful for those who sponsor the show.
Our sponsors.
Let's take a moment and hear a few words from them.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Man, so much fun.
That was fun.
It was like riding a sled down a marketing hill.
Yeah.
It was like,
wee, we would say. It was beautiful. Well, yeah. You did New Orleans. That was fun, right?
It was great.
Did you eat a lot of Café du Mont? Did you have some beignets?
I had beignets from Café du Mont.
Oh, my gosh.
Twice, actually. Once in the airport and then once at the Real. But there was a little restaurant across from there. I forget what it was called.
Were you a little crawfish étouffée?
We walked up to get beignets for breakfast, and you're not going to do that in New Orleans.
Yeah.
I mean, the line was around the block.
Yeah. But it's pretty quick.
And so, well, not that day.
Oh.
And so we went across it. We just started Googling and went across the street and had this amazing, like, brunch,
mm-hmm.
like right across the street. And then we walked around. We went a day early, took her out of school, did a day early. And
yeah.
Kind of walked around Jackson Square, went into the cathedral, which is the oldest, you know, one of the oldest active churches in history. I mean, that building, I think, is late 1700s, early 1800s, but the congregation's like early 1700s, and they've been mm-hmm. so it was amazing historical stuff. And Sadie loves the history stuff as
That's
well,
cool.
which is really cool. Yeah, so walk around, went up to the waterfront, and then we got a carriage ride, and so we did like a French Quarter historical tour in a carriage.
Nice.
So that was nice. But the beignets were so funny in Jackson Square when we got our beignets. We walked over to eat in the park, and there's like this, I guess, aggregated gravel kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and this long park bench at an angle, and it was just powdered sugar
yeah.
in front of it, as far as the eye could see. So everyone did what we were doing, going yeah. and get the beignets. But the beignets are amazing, but they are like
yeah.
whatever you're wearing
yeah.
is going to be covered in powdered sugar,
mm-hmm.
which is normally how I dress anyway.
Right.
But it was just funny because I was like, oh my gosh, there's a lots of people who sat right here and ate.
Yeah, there's just like certain things that are not road food. Like when I travel with my brother and he'll get like a bag of Doritos and I'm like, oh, there's just going to be
yeah.
orange dust
everywhere.
Like if somebody eats Cheetos in the car.
Yeah.
You're just like, we're all having Cheetos.
And you don't want to lick your fingers when you're traveling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find that since COVID, beforehand, I'd be like, yeah, whatever.
Right.
And now I'm so used to like trying to keep my hands relatively clean.
Interesting.
That when I eat something messy on the road, I just kind of stand there like, does anyone have a wet wipe? Like I have to, you know, it's.
That was a weird thing about COVID where I never felt so conscious of touching my face. They were like, don't touch your face.
Yeah.
I immediately wanted to touch my face.
You realize, oh, I've been touching my face all day, every day, for all my life.
I think it's all I ever did.
Yeah.
Was touch my face.
I agree. And wasn't there a worship song about that?
I want to see you.
I want to touch my face.
Your face.
It's got to be your face.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Want to see your face? I don't know. Touch.
I don't. That was always, I know Tim Hawkins had a funny bit about that, but
yeah,
about
how like men,
yeah,
that's why men don't get it in as into worship.
Like when I was a baby,
the songs are very like touchy feely.
Like when I had Sadie was a baby, she, you know, tried to poke your eye out or whatever. Babies touch your face a lot, touch your beard, pull on it and all. So maybe when I was like
yeah.
a spiritual infant,
right,
I was more likely to want to touch the father's face, but I don't know. I mean, I'm not against
maybe
it.
Maybe it means like metaphorically, I want to like be close enough.
Yeah, I think that's what it's going for.
Want to pull your beard?
Are you a sloppy wet kiss guy or an unforeseen kiss guy?
Both of them are weird in their own ways.
Because
sloppy wet is weird. Unforeseen is assault.
I don't know, Johnny. You know what? There's a movement back to sloppy wet. I mean, among most worship leaders I know.
Of course, we're talking about the famous song.
Reckless Love.
No, not Reckless Love.
It's another 6-8.
What is the song?
It's David Crowder.
Heaven Meets Earth, like a song. It's How He Loves Us, right?
How He Loves. He didn't write it, but it was made famous. It was John Mark McMillan, I think, wrote
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
right?
John Mark McMillan. And his was like, When Heaven Meets Earth, like a sloppy wet kiss.
You know what? And people went away from that and said, unforeseen.
So it wasn't like, I'm going to have a sloppy wet kiss with the Lord. That's not what the line is. It's about heaven meeting earth.
It's about
in this
being a real
moment.
Yeah.
It's a metaphor for that moment of like heaven meeting earth.
But right. Don't make it so.
He made it sloppy wet. And so David Crowder's version was like an unforeseen kiss.
Which had to be a production decision.
Right.
It was
this is a marketplace decision. We feel like we can.
But most people I know now prefer sloppy wet kiss because it removes that esoteric, ethereal, high church kind of like, because
yeah.
you're right, an unforeseen kiss. I understand what it means is we didn't know Jesus was coming.
Yeah.
Right? We didn't know that he was going to come as a baby and all those kinds of things. So there, that, you know, we didn't know salvation was right around the corner. But the idea, there's something, and I rolled my eyes at sloppy wet for many years, and now I'm just not that guy anymore. I'm like, actually, I think we need more worship songs that are,
yeah,
you know, kind of, expressive to real life. Because here's the thing, Johnny. And the sloppy wet kiss is not unspiritual. I think that's really what we're struggling with. Like, we want that high-minded, sort of pious way of seeing it. But kisses are not pious. Wait. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would they not be? I don't know, Johnny. When we used to sing it, we say unforeseen.
Yeah, we did.
Because that's an old enough song that you and I think sang that in the band.
Probably. Yeah.
Worship songs.
Yeah. We're getting up there, man. So I did a show in Pocatello, Idaho, which...
That sounds like a made-up place to me.
It does. Yeah. It sounds like I made it up. But believe me, it's there. I flew to Salt Lake City, and then drove another 3 hours to get to Pocatello, Idaho.
Wow.
And then we did a show.
Salt Lake was the nearest major airport to that.
Yeah, and we did a show there, and then I had to drive back after the show and then take a 5 a.m. flight to North Carolina. Ooh. Because my agent doesn't own a Globe.
Yeah.
And so we were on very little sleep. But the show was so fun. And the guy that was there, the pastor there, he was a Nashville guy and had moved there, whatever, 15 years ago to be a worship leader at this church. They're called Rocky Mountain Ministries. And
in North Carolina?
No, in Pocatello.
Because that's poorly
So
named.
He's up there, and it was really poorly named. I thought they'd be more Rocky. That's John Denver. Anyway, so, but I was looking, I was in his office waiting, because that was kind of my little green room was his office, which happens a lot, and that's fun. But there was like all these gold records on the walls, and like 6 million, congratulations to Buddy, because his name was Buddy. Congratulations to Buddy Green for 6 million, blah, 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 sold. And it was like Third Day and Michael W. Smith and all these huge landmark records, like huge collections of things. And he had signed guitars by all these artists and tour lanyards from Third Day's 2003 tour. And I was like, what in the world? So I asked him, I go, is this you? He goes, yeah. He goes, I was in sales and what was it? Distribution for Provident Integrity for many years. He goes, and so we ended up talking about CCM for like an hour.
Wow.
Backstage, just like he had every CD. He had a huge CD collection. He was really fun to talk to. He was interesting. And I loved, my favorite thing about him was he had this great sense about him of like, there was no cynicism in him about the, even though he was really an insider in the industry. Like he was still, you could tell, just like he had a good experience from it. And he was like, and they still hosted a ton of concerts. Like Dane had just been there the week before with Honor and Glory.
Oh, wow.
Whose Disciples like Worship offshoot. That's their little side project. And Dane is in that. Our friend Dane Allen is in that band. And they had just been there because he goes, Dane sent me these dates and he goes, hey, are you in any of these cities I'd like to meet up with you? Because we never see each other.
Yeah.
He goes, just give me your tour calendar. So he sent me and it said Pocatello and I go, you're kidding me. I'm in Pocatello.
Out of like, all the places y'all go,
I'm there a week after you. I said, it has to be the same church. And when I got there, it was. He goes, yeah, we just had Honor and Glory.
Wow.
And I was like, you know, I know that. I know Dane, who's one of the singers in that. He's like, oh my gosh. So yeah, I was like, I was his college pastor and like, he's like, no way. So that was kind of a funny connection, but it was just kind of cool to talk to a guy who's like seen behind the curtain and it didn't like, wasn't like, yeah, you know how it is. Like, he was very still, like, had a positive outlook on, not necessarily the industry, but just like, I just love when I see guys who've been doing it a long time and they come out of it and they still love God and they love the church and they love their wife.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Well, you go, that's the goal.
We're talking at lunch a little bit about that. I think that we have to remember that people exist within imperfect systems, and especially when that system gets a really bad rap.
Yeah.
You know, and we have to be careful because I'm not saying that we can't inadvertently prop up unacceptable parts of organizations or systems or movements.
We call that the PJ, the unacceptable
part. But that like idea though, that they're just great people in different places. And it's easy to want to sum them all up and go,
right.
I mean, CCM was a season of our lives.
Yeah.
It vastly affected me in the 90s, especially as a kid. And there was some, in fact, I was at that tournament in New Orleans and I sent you a text for whatever reason. Sometimes like on the road doing that, it's harder for me. We're up very early usually. And I'm not on my game spiritual disciplines wise, you know, as much as I want to be, I try to be, but this weekend I felt like I was not. But I really felt like I'm speaking spiritually here forgive me. I don't know why we're afraid to do that, but it felt like there was like this song on my heart.
Yeah.
And it was an old, I mean, such an old song by PFR.
Yeah.
Now, I think that song was like 94.
Pray for Rain.
And it was Anything is what it's called.
Yeah.
And I sent it to you. And when I started listening to it, that dude's voice, by the way, and that recording was still so good.
They're a great group.
I was like, this is
good. They were kind of underrated for the time.
I think they were ahead a little bit of their time. Because they had several songs that had a real like Beatles layering, which you weren't hearing in Christian music a lot.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of like high level production or at least arrangement.
Yeah, they were really clever.
Yeah.
And I think it was at a time when that was not being rewarded in the marketplace.
No.
You know, everything was needed to be kind of on the nose and have a little bow on it. And they were kind of like pushing the boundaries a little bit and that wasn't being rewarded.
I did notice that there's a couple songs, and I've thought about this about Christian music at that time and even early to mid 2000s. I don't think our music did this as much. I wrote a few dumb songs like this. I don't think we ever did as much. But, you know, they had a song, I love it so much. It's called Wonder Why.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very like, it's very not aggressive towards the person who is skeptical of faith or walking away from faith, but a very like telling you all the bad things that are happening within you because of that. And then I managed a band called Skyhook, you know, which is and in their time, I remember they and others, they were writing songs like that. Like, we don't want to be a pretender, or we don't want to be, it was a real come to the center of faith and be strong, because it was for people of faith. And so it was a real like,
challenge.
It was more, don't be lukewarm, you know? And I thought how much that season of time, I think that industry got so much, so big to be its own thing.
Yeah.
Right. That within itself, then you're almost calling, especially teenagers.
You're calling people within the industry to another level of like purity almost.
Right.
Like now we have to put stop gaps. We have to police ourselves now.
Right.
Because even within the industry, there's become like a bloated part of it.
Right.
That has its own excesses and affluence and it's creating problems.
Yeah.
Whereas when you start out, it was just like a bunch of like hippies that found Jesus and like, how can we incorporate our Christian faith into this music that we do?
Yeah.
And then it became this bloated industry that had its own pitfalls and problems.
Well, it had its own stars. It had its own,
you
know, people who were having their you know, falls from grace. But that's a whole different thing. And that can happen in the mainstream world. But when that happens in the Christian world, it's like a much steeper fall.
Yeah.
Remember the song? It's so funny. We were probably 98, 99. DC Talk, the way they handled this is they put out basically a song that was satirical, speaking to themselves.
Yeah. My friend.
Yeah.
And we're talking about a friend.
But I remember in the CCM like world, there was not even like the internet was just beginning.
Yeah.
But I remember in our circles, there was like talk about which Christian artists they were calling out.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was like, I wonder if they're talking about Michael W. Smith.
Yeah. Is this about Jars? Jars of Clay?
Remember he put that girl in his video and there was no cross or anything. And then, or Jars of Clay.
Yeah, it's like, clearly it's about them.
It was about them.
Yeah. Because, I mean, there's a verse in it where it says, I saw your video on VH1. Looks like they spent a ton. How does it feel to be the flavor for a spell?
Yeah.
It's like they're talking about, they had crossover success. They're talking about.
Because they were in Arsenio Hall and they were on all the shows.
Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of how it should go, is you should be able to hold a mirror up to yourself, even in your art, and not just be like only pointing your like rage outward.
Yeah.
Everybody, because that's a very like paranoid place to end up creatively. Yep. You need to be looking inward too.
In fact, it's funny. I read that I'm going to use this actually in our quote of the day here in a moment anyway, but I read in the Tim Keller daily devotional called God's Wisdom for Navigating Life, which is about Proverbs. It's not a great title, but it's probably the best little book. It's daily. I'll send it to you guys in the group all the time
because it's
literally a 2-minute read or less, you know, but it's so he's just very judicious with the words because there's such a, I mean, I'm amazed how much he got into it in such small words, which, you know, is not my best thing to do as a writer, but he talks about how your actions open your eyes and like he says, what's a character flaw of mine that others can see, but I can't see clearly? You know, and he goes on to say that, like, there's nothing worse than not knowing the things about yourself. Like, mm-hmm. it is the worst of sins, which, because it's pride.
Yeah.
Right. But that's the whole thing of Christianity is always supposed to be directed first at me. And I know we've said it before, but, it hit me one day when I was reading in Proverbs or reading in Psalms where David's crying out to God about why did the wicked prosper?
Yeah.
And I realized, I think, especially going through recovery, like, when I ask why the wicked prospers, I'm asking about me now. Like, when I really got down where my need for Christ was right. God, why do you let me prosper?
Yeah.
When and then David had plenty of those where you could tell it was about him.
Yeah.
And it was about others. But I think, or, you know, anytime you tell someone, you know, hate the sin, love the sinner, right? It's always somebody else's sin that you're hating.
Yeah.
It's rarely ever your own. So I just think that when introspection becomes extrospection.
Oh, that's, there's a book title.
There you go, guys. When it becomes like, you know, when you're pointing the thing that's changing you towards others to change, it loses its power.
Yeah. And it's like, salvation is like, well, the gospel, it's one of the things like, it's hard. That's one of the reasons it's hard to maintain church growth. It's because, like, all you hear is the gospel. But it's like, we're supposed to be reminded of it every day.
Right.
It's because we need to be reminded of it because we forget it and we forget our need for it. We think it's about other people. If everybody could just figure it out like I did. And it's like, somebody said this the other day it's a friend of mine that's dealing with, an elderly person in their life who has dementia, mm-hmm. and they're trying to make hard choices right now. And they're like, it's the hardest thing we've ever had to deal with, but we've had to like find peace. And they go, he literally said this. He said, I have to put on my oxygen mask first.
Mm.
And I think that's the gospel too. It's like this idea of like, we got to go save the world. It's like, make sure you're taking the oxygen in for yourself.
Yeah.
Before you just go out and try to be like this exasperated person who's trying to save the world. It's like, are you accessing this? Because if not, you won't have the strength and it's not going to be real.
It's not real. Yeah. Above all, even if you could pull off the strength part of it.
Yeah.
Because we heard that in evangelicalism growing up a lot, but it was almost so that you can show up and still, I don't mean perform in a fake way, but you can perform what is required of you to help others or to make this statement or be this shining city on a hill that people see. But the whole point of the shining city on the hill is that it's actually a shining city.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens to be seen because of how bright it is. But if you just want to put up billboards, you know, and hope that the city, you know.
And it's on a hill that you didn't build, by the way.
Right.
Yeah. It's not like we put it on the hill.
Right. Yeah. You didn't build the hill.
Yeah.
And you probably didn't really build the city.
Right.
But you can
be. It's not even your city.
Right.
It's like, that's the thing. When we start taking like ownership of it, it's very dangerous.
Yeah.
And, it's like the old thing we used to hear is like a lighthouse doesn't say, hey, look, I'm a lighthouse. It just shines. You know, like there's a time just to shine and just be. But I do think if we're accessing something for ourselves, sometimes it feels selfish, but it's like we have to be in touch with it, or it's whatever we're putting out is not real.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Very interesting. Well, that was a nice little memory lane walk, Johnny.
It was, John. We did it.
Yeah. And I'd like to take this moment, I think, to take us into the next segment.
You've been so good at segues today. Let's do John's quote of the week.
That's a little thing that we like to call They Talked About That. I tried to go as high as I could there. I'm singing, by the way, on Easter Sunday on the team. I'm doing part of the preaching. We kind of tag team. So
okay, good.
One of those days.
Is there an egg hunt in my future
here? I am bringing an egg hunt.
No,
actually, I'm
not. Okay.
But yeah.
You don't have a joke about how we should take our offering and put it in the egg and make the usher search the room. make tithing interesting.
Yeah. It'd be great.
I want tithing to be interesting in churches anyway. Like, I want to put, like, a bunch of churches have gotten rid of drum cages now.
Right.
And so they have these weird rooms now that they don't use because now drummers are more acoustic on stage and they want that feeling in the room like we do.
Yeah.
And so they just have these weird closets that they've built and I want those to be like, you put somebody that has a need in the church, you put them in that room, you have fans on the bottom, you blow a bunch of money in there.
Yep.
We call it the benevolence booth. And they can grab whatever they...
Yeah, you got 20 minutes.
Make it fun.
Yeah.
You know?
And everyone's watching and cheering.
Everybody's offering goes in there. They just take it up there. They throw it in on the floor.
It's like one of those blessing boxes, but it's brought into the 21st century.
Absolutely.
Wow.
People start wearing, like, loose-fitting clothes to catch it all.
Yeah.
Big parkas.
Ugh. It'd be great.
Anyway, we'll see you Easter.
Feels like something Jesus would come, like, build, you know, make a whip and turn over tables for, but...
Maybe.
But, I don't know.
That seems harsh.
Today, it's not a Tim Keller quote, but it was in this Tim Keller book, man. And I do, man, this book, it just gets me all the time. But he was talking about, in fact, let me get to it, Johnny.
Oh, boy.
Let me get to it, Johnny.
We'll edit all this out.
No, we probably won't. But it hit me. I can't find it.
It really hit him.
Sorry, guys. It was so...
You can't remember it or even
it was
flip
so
to it.
Important that I can't.
Great. We'll definitely,
I don't want to have to edit.
We'll definitely need to edit this out.
Okay. Just forget it. There it is. Okay.
And we're back.
He says, I'm just going to read part of it. Walking on a path always takes you somewhere. Mm-hmm. Life is likened to a path because every action takes you somewhere. That is, the act changes you, making it easier for you to do it again. Eventually, it becomes so natural to be cruel and selfish that you cannot rest until you're doing it. This is from a Proverbs chapter 4. And here's the quote he sent that I looked up in his footnotes, and it's an unknown origin. So I'm quoting an unknown origin.
Okay.
Sow a thought, reap an action. Sow an action, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny.
Oh, wow.
It was so good. I actually quoted it to Sadie in the car this morning, like, because it kind of shows you to me how things build and they start with a thought.
Yeah.
I know when Reggie and I wrote the book, Not So Black and White, talking about race, the big thing we would always hear, because it's not like I'm the foremost activist or a guy even who lives in a very diverse community.
Mm-hmm.
They would say, you know, what does everyone need to do? But they want to go straight to sort of the habits of everything or the actions. And we made the statement in there that, guys, changing the way you think is not a small thing.
Right.
That would be a very large thing. In fact, it's the impetus of all other change.
Right.
You won't do something different that you haven't thought differently about.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Or just, first, you have to open your mind to think differently.
Yeah.
You know, which that feels like in today's day and age, just giving that to somebody. First of all, like the biggest thing you can give to somebody right now is your attention, like giving someone attention and then opening your mind to what they're saying and being like, I wasn't raised this way, but I'm going to listen to you and I'm going to open my mind to what you're saying. I'm not going to immediately be like, oh, you're not like me. Then, you know, so yeah, like just changing your mind is the step. It's a stepping stone.
Well, scripture even says, you know, be renewed in the spirit of your mind. Or one version of one of the verses says, you know, let God change you into a different person by changing the way you think. Let him transform you by the renewing of your mind. I think those just become sort of background familiar verses that we hear instead of realizing, oh, the mind is what I'm thinking through right now. And that's what's hard to think about. Changing the thing that you're thinking about through. Like these thoughts, that's why we need the spirits, right? We need something on the outside, because for me, just to figure it out in my mind, at some point becomes, you know, some sort of self-fulfilling therapy, right? I'm trying to take care of myself, change myself from within myself. And I think there is work to be done there. But to say the way God changes me, though, is when my mind is changed. I don't need to be resistant to that. I need to be open to where he's changing it. It doesn't mean necessarily I'm changing the I think immediate sort of reaction to that comes inside of me is, oh, you want me to change my moral stance. You want me to change. Yeah. You just want me to loosen the way I've seen things. And I think that's what we jump to cover over the idea of, like you said, just being willing to listen or to be kind,
right?
As if those things don't exist.
Or like we talk when I used to be on staff here at church, we would talk about not majoring on the minors, and like that was part of our church culture. Is like that was important to us that we didn't, like, if it was important that we made it a huge part of our core, but if it was something that it was not as important, that we did not make it more important than it was,
right?
I think we've done that with some things in American culture and American evangelicalism. we've majored on the minors in some way. We saw that in denominational stuff a lot, where you talk about people that make the gifts as important as someone's salvation experience, for instance.
Yeah.
They would make a gifts, like think the church was about the gifts and the expression of those gifts of the Spirit. And that's what they wanted to be known for. Versus like a chain. No, they wouldn't say it this way, but I would say like, it became so important that you'd be like, I would look for evidence of a changed community or a changed heart. And I'd be like, well, there's a lot of show going on.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't see a lot else. And it's so that became frustrating. But yeah, I think that you, if we don't, we major on the minors sometimes in life and in our relationships, and it's dangerous.
Well, because yeah, the minors, when a minor is a major, there's only room in one spot.
Yeah. You only have so much energy. Yeah.
It's Holy Week this week, when this is coming out. And, if you guys, we talk about the Lectio 365 app. And so this morning on Wednesday, this is coming out today. So yeah, Wednesday, March 27th. Today is the day they think that Judas probably made the deal with the chief priests to betray Jesus. And man, I'm telling you, the guy reading it today, I mean, goes into that there's a possibility that he felt. And I wrote about this one time in my very first book, was a biblical historical fiction. And this was, lots of scholars think this, that Judas wasn't just trying to betray him. He was in some ways trying to usher in the kind of Messiah, because he just raised Lazarus from the dead. He didn't think that they could take him. There's a chance he didn't think they could do this.
Right.
So he'll make a little money on the side because he had a money problem. We know that he was right. You know, dipping into the money. And then he would betray him, and they would come to take him, and he would just become the one who conquers the Romans.
Right, he would force Jesus' hand into being the kind of Messiah that Judas thought he would be.
And
he'll become a military warrior.
And the guy talks about how that's so easy even today for us to make, because that was, for Israel, a nationalistic thing. We need this Messiah, and so we're going to make one of our own thinking, of our own manner. And not the Jesus that he was, which what they say is the kind of Messiah who is going to die for his enemies rather than kill them. I mean, that was just an amazing line. But how fast, like you said, that minor, when it's not the thing that should be in the center, that suddenly you find yourself putting something else center.
Yeah.
And then it's completely out of whack, and we end up betraying the things that we think we believe the most. So anyway. Yeah, Johnny. Sow a thought, reap an action. Sow an action, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny. It's always better when you whisper at the end.
It is.
Yeah.
Reap a destiny. That's beautiful. Get busy living, get busy dying.
I think that's the takeaway, guys.
Morgan Freeman said it best. Saint Morgan Freeman.
Yes. Patron saint of,
I don't know.
Yeah. Johnny, let's go back.
Let's go back to close the show. This Week in History, we call it Talk About Then. John, this week, the inventor of the wetsuit was born. March 1923, died 2017. He had a nice long life. Because of the wetsuit, we'll never know. He wore a wetsuit every day. He credited it to the key. Said it keeps all the bad stuff out. He was an American surfer. He's credited with inventing the wetsuit. Wanting to surf longer in the colder waters of Northern California, he developed the first neoprene wetsuit. He established the O'Neill Surfwear and Gear Company. Huh. So it makes sense. Yeah. You see O'Neill on a lot of those. You see a lot of surf gear that says O'Neill on it. I did not know that that's linked to Jack O'Neill, who invented the wetsuit. He was known for his eye patch, which he wore due to a surfing accident.
Oh.
So this guy had a grizzled... He had some stories.
He spent some time in the water.
Yeah. How do you lose an eye in a surfing accident? Did he take one of those fins?
Maybe he took a
maybe
reef.
A coral?
Yeah.
Or like one of those, you know, those things at the bottom of the surfboard, those fins at the bottom that help it.
Yeah, maybe the waves just push the board
flip
up.
Flip that up and it,
yeah,
right into
there's
the
no
old.
There's no way to know. But
poor Jack.
Yeah.
Don't let go. Anyway, he seemed to have a, that's interesting. Have you ever been, I don't need to ask you this. The reason I brought this in is because I was thinking, I don't know if John's ever done. You ever done diving or surfing? You've done snorkeling, but that's not. You don't wear a wetsuit for that.
I've not surfed.
Yeah. There's really, talk about clothes that aren't very like great if you have a couple extra LBs. A wetsuit, there's nowhere to hide in a wetsuit.
No.
You know, you pull one of those things on. It's like right here. It's like Nate Bergatz used to have a bit about Under Armour. He was like, Under Armour, you look fatter than you do without clothes. He goes, if they were just going to, like, you know, when they, if you have like a consult for plastic surgery, they should just put that shirt on you and then just be like, well, clearly you can see the area that we're going to focus on. Instead of drawing on you, they just put you in Under Armour. Anyway, the wetsuit, there's nowhere to go. Like, you're just in that thing. It is. And you're going to see if you got some paunch there.
But they're usually there. There's like the diving wetsuits are like really thick usually, I think. Yeah. And they're black.
They're more forgiving.
It's not like you're wearing an orange
wetsuit. True. Buddy, don't get me started.
Bright orange. I did notice, by the way, to your point earlier, that they had put out, because the last one we won the SEC tournament was a gray shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this was
just more, I feel.
This is like a straight up, this is the kind of shirt you
now,
wear,
listen, I
you
want
wear
more,
to a
like
game.
If I'm watching a game and I'm watching for our fans on TV, I want them to be wearing this.
Orange.
I want to see a bright orange, like sea of orange.
Yeah.
So I don't want them to do the muted colors because I feel like they're phoning it in. But for me, just out in the streets.
Just walking in a Longhorn.
I don't necessarily want to look like a big orange.
Yeah.
And I love my team, John.
Johnny.
Maybe it's my skin, too. I feel like it pulls the orange out of my skin a little bit. It draws. There's just certain colors that aren't befitting.
I think you look great.
It's not in my palette.
I don't know. You have a palette?
I have a palette.
Okay.
Now. John, this week, 1881, the Barnum and Bailey Circus is formed when P.T. Barnum combined his circus with the Cooper and Bailey Circus. What happened to Cooper?
Yeah, no kidding.
So when Barnum and Bailey, because Cooper and Bailey, let me see if this tells us what happened. It was initially named P.T. Barnum's Greatest Show on Earth, later changing to Barnum and Bailey Circus. The following year, they acquired Jumbo, billed as the world's largest elephant. When Barnum died 10 years later, James Anthony Bailey bought out the circus from his widow.
Okay.
So now Bailey owned the circus, but he still called it the Barnum. Because I remember it being called Barnum and Bailey Circus my whole childhood.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
Barnum was a big name.
And, of course, PETA got involved, and now they don't really do it anymore. They don't do a lot of the tricks because, like, they realize now some of these animals, it wasn't a great life.
Yeah, I mean, Barnum was literally the biggest celebrity of his day.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a huge deal.
Yeah. And then people are torn on his legacy. You know, there was the Greatest Showman and everything, which was obviously a very, you know, they took a lot of license with the truth. But that's fine. It was a good movie. But, you know, the whole idea of, like, was he... you know, exploiting people that were like the freak show people.
Right.
Or like, it's not like everybody else was given another opportunity. So like, if you're the bearded lady, like you had a job now, you got to go tour the country and you made a living.
Yeah.
So like, that's the weird thing. It's like people, it's almost like, I like my way of doing it better than your way of not doing it. There's something, I don't know. I don't know enough about the guy. It's a complicated legacy. But anyway.
Yeah.
Barnum and Bailey Circus. Is it a bummer to you that Sadie won't experience the circus as you knew it as a kid?
Yeah.
Because it's just, what is it now? I mean, it's got to be a little bit more politically correct now.
I don't know. I think at the municipal auditorium, I never took her when she was little for some reason. Because that's where I went when I was a kid.
Yeah.
To the circus.
Because I would be thinking that too. If I went today, I'd be thinking like, I wonder what these elephants' lives are like. I couldn't stop myself from thinking. I'm an animal lover, so it's hard for me to think. Like, oh no, are these tigers?
And my Sadie would be
Are these tigers on drugs?
Yeah, right.
To keep them from eating this guy that's got a whip
and a chair.
Maybe
they're dealing drugs. Maybe they've started a life of crime because of all this.
You think the tigers are started some kind of
I've seen it just the...
you've seen a tiger cartel?
Oh, tiger cartels are notorious in this part of the country.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
John, this week, 1969, Dwight D. Eisenhower passed away. He was an American politician, John, as you know, the 34th U.S. president, 1953 to 61. Five-star general. He was the first U.S. president to conduct a televised news conference. This is the part I thought was interesting, though. In his farewell address, do you know about this? His farewell address, what was significant about it? The things he kind of warned about? There's always kind of prescient speeches that past presidents give. Like we've talked before, because you're a big, you know, early U.S. historian about how, like, Jefferson talked about how the separation of powers was so important and the idea that we don't want to become like the monarchy we escaped. So here's how we protect it.
Well, Washington did that.
But you've talked about that before. This was interesting, though. Was it
a warning about the press and the media?
It was a warning about the buildup of the military-industrial complex.
Okay.
And of scientific research becoming a chase for government funding instead of the search for knowledge. Mm-hmm. So both of those things we've kind of noticed. Like, anytime you want to build up, like, anytime you want to get a rubber stamp for billions of dollars, you just say, like, we need these missiles.
Yep.
We got to become the, we got to be the biggest dog in the yard or we'll get overtaken. And that's, you just get this rubber stamp. That's how kind of, and so Eisenhower was kind of afraid of that. And now we see Big Pharma has become like this weird, it's its own thing now.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of inert. It can be good or bad. Like, I think it's very dangerous to be like, let's just not take any medicine then.
Right.
Like, that's really a weird overcorrection that we're seeing
I've
now.
I've been taking medicine this entire time we've been talking.
John just got these drugs from a tiger, and he says...
I've never felt better. I'll tell you
what. His coat is shiny.
It's beautiful. You know, it's funny you say all that, too, because while I was watching, of course, The Food That Built America.
Right.
And that's how... Minute Maid orange juice. Like, orange juice was not a thing in the early 20th century.
Right.
Like, Americans didn't have it for breakfast.
Right.
And it was World War II, and they needed vitamin C for the soldiers.
Kids were getting scurvy.
And so the soldiers, like, they were sending over something that was just nasty. And so basically there was a government contract available for someone to figure out a way to get preserved. And so they went into the...
How they did the concentration and all that.
Yeah. And so Morris was the guy who... work with someone else to, they dehydrated it.
Mm-hmm.
Then they, no, sorry, they froze it.
Yeah.
Then dehydrated it, then sent it over and the soldiers had to pour water in it. But as soon as they got the whole thing done, the factories all built, all the stuff to get the government contract, the war ended.
Oh, wow.
And now they're stuck with all these frozen.
So then they had to sell it to the American people.
So it was like this, no one wanted it.
Yeah.
And this guy had this, his dream was, well, we could get people to do it. And at first the moms wouldn't do it. They're like, it's so complicated. So they started this huge ad campaign. And guess who their person was that put him on the map?
Who's that?
Bing Crosby.
He was showing people how to mix it in the pictures.
Yeah, he became their guy. And they didn't have enough they didn't have enough money to pay him, so they paid him in stock options.
Okay.
And the thing took off, obviously.
So did he get a lot of money from?
Oh, I'm sure.
Big vitamin C.
And then the kids liked it because they could pour the thing in, pour the water in, and do the stirring. It like gave them something to do
was shake easy. And bake, and I helped.
And so that's how orange juice. Of course, Tropicana started around the same time, and that's by the way, the interesting part is Tropicana put on their carton not from concentrate. It was their way of saying we're better than Minute Maid.
Oh wow!
Because concentrate obviously is garbage. Without saying it, without attacking them in a way you could sue them or whatever. So now we've seen that our whole life, not from concentrate. Was a marketing campaign to say this is fresh versus that's not.
Interesting.
So interesting, but there was all government contracts as well. We have orange juice.
When I was in seventh grade, it's one of the jokes I remember my teacher telling me, like a dad joke. It was that my dad had to quit working at the orange juice factory because he just couldn't concentrate.
I remember. You told me that early on.
Yeah, that's like I don't know. It's some of those jokes.
And that's when I knew that you were going to be a...
That's when you knew.
Big comedian.
John, finally, this week, 1871, London's Royal Albert Hall opens. Do you know about Royal Albert Hall? Yeah. It's one of the biggest venues.
Yeah, it's Victoria's husband, Albert.
And it was then that its famous echo was discovered. Because due to the cove of its ceiling, it caused some to remark, the only place where a British composer could be sure of hearing his work twice. So anyway, they built this big building, and it had huge acoustical issues to the point where you would get kind of psyched out. You would hear yourself clap back at yourself.
Yeah.
And this went on for decades, evidently, because it says this was remedied in the 1960s. So this was dedicated to 1871. And it was almost 100 years later, they hung some acoustic diffusers from the ceiling, which remedied the problem. So until then, you're just in there hearing, today, consider myself. So you're just hearing...
You know, there's a spot in the U.S. Capitol over the years that you can, it's one though spot. It's not like an area. It's like you stand in one spot.
And you can get the...
And you can hear people from another certain spot. And so politicians from the opposite party would stand here if they were over on the other side talking. And if they got just the right spot, they could overhear their opponents and their plans and strategies. Yeah.
That's a great... That should be in a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If only we knew someone had to write movies.
I thought you were going to say that there's a spot in the Capitol where you can hear yourself talk back to yourself. And I was like, that's politics in a word.
That's what
it is. I just want to hear what I just said, how wonderful it was, and not worthless at all. Anyway,
we can do another hour on
it's
that.
It's an election year.
Hey, Johnny, man, our listeners have been reaching out a lot lately.
Oh, right.
And we're so grateful.
How do they reach out, John?
They can go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
Yes.
And they can email us at hello and talk about that podcast.
Hello.
Hello.
All caps.
How are you? I wonder how you interpret it.
Yeah.
Like if it's like a, hello, McFly, and like we're, right, you know, knocking you on the head right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, they should go check out the website because there's lots of cool stuff there.
You can become a patron. We love our patrons. They get ad-free content, so they get the shows without ads. We love our fine supporters and our fine ads, our fine sponsors. But if you want to get shows without ads, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
So there, click on support, upper right.
It doesn't cost as much as you think, Johnny.
No.
I mean, put it this way, we're still not making money.
For the cost of a cup of, well, coffee's really expensive.
It
never
is.
Mind.
Yeah.
A bowl of coffee
we can get you. So check it out. You should also check out, man, Johnny's touring dates. This guy. Yeah. Where in the world is Johnny? That's the illustrated book we need.
I'm going from Idaho to North Carolina for no reason.
My goodness.
No, it's the reason is people need me, John. I know where I'm needed. It's like a bat signal of comedy that goes up.
And it is.
I'm in Huntsville. If you listen to this, if this comes out tonight and you're listening to this on Thursday, the 28th of March, you can get tickets. There's still time.
That sounded like one of those, if you can hear this, then I'm probably already dead.
That's right. It really is. Something horrible has happened. But I have a show at Huntsville.
Yeah.
Stand Up Live Comedy Club, March 28th. But I've got other shows coming up. I've got the big Eclipse tour coming up. Mm-hmm. Leslie, Arkansas I've got Lewiston, Idaho.
Yeah.
That's April 4th. Get tickets for that. And then I've got April 5th. I will be in Leslie, Arkansas.
Yeah.
Right in the path of the...
You got to do it.
The path of totality. Then, April 7th, Vincennes, Indiana.
Yeah.
Again, right in the path. We're hoping for, like, clear skies. That's the hope. Is like, you want to be in the path, but also you need no cloud cover.
Right.
So, we don't know. It's still kind of a crapshoot on that.
What if the clouds eclipse the eclipse? Oh.
It would be a bummer. You'll still get the darkness, but you won't get that full
We get darkness
photo op.
Every night, Johnny. It's called night.
I know. Anyway, but come get you. There's tickets available for all those shows, and you can go to my website, johnnyw.com.
And by the way, if there is a cloudy eclipse, still don't stare at it.
Yeah, don't.
I just wouldn't.
It's
do
not
it.
A good idea.
Yeah. I'm no scientist or doctor, but
no.
Maybe the guy O'Neill, maybe that's what happened to his eye.
He was
surfing during an eclipse.
Surfing, looked up.
He looked up with one eye.
Just one eye.
You're like, I mean, that's one way to make sure that in case it doesn't work, that you could still.
Yeah.
I don't know. He should have thought this through.
I think I'd look good with a patch.
You think so?
I think I could be a patch guy.
Not a lot of accessorizing happening with you.
Yeah, and you can bejewel it a little bit, put your initials.
Oh.
Whatever you need.
That'd be a JW.
It's just cool.
Bejeweled.
It's just a good story. It's like if you walk in and you got a patch, like immediately the whole room turns and is like, that
this
guy's
interesting.
He's got a story.
Right. Did he wrestle a crocodile?
Yeah.
Right. And this is the only thing he lost.
A weird tiger drug deal gone wrong.
My goodness. Hey guys, we appreciate all the time you gave us today. It's so much fun, man. Send us more comments and emails. Send us your questions. Hey, give us a good review. That actually really helps.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. And you also can subscribe to our YouTube channel. That would be very helpful as well. Mm-hmm. The more YouTube subscribers we have, the more people we get to reach with these incredible videos. You haven't watched, you should go watch the show sometime.
See our mug. See my bright orange t-shirt.
See the orange shirt. It's gonna be great. But guys, let's do it again next week. We appreciate it. We'll see you then on
Talk About That.
Hey there, it's Nicole Eunice from the How to Study the Bible podcast, and I'd love to invite you to join us as we weekly discover a passage of God's Word together. From beginning to end, from principles to practicals, we are here to make sure that God's Word is powerful and relevant to your life. If that sounds like something you're looking for, I would love to invite you to subscribe. You can go to lifeaudio.com and search How to Study the Bible, and we'll see you there.